Hello, and welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America, designed for people like you who are learning American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz in Washington. Every day of the year on this program, we bring you news from and about the United States and the world. Because this program is produced for learners of American English, like you, we speak a little slower than normal, and we use words and phrases that are easy to understand. Listen to the program, then practice saying the words and sentences the way we do. It's a free and easy way to improve your American English skills every day of the year. This is what you will hear on today's program. Our higher education correspondent Pete Musto is off this week, but he'll be back next week. This week, as always, you will hear Words and Their Stories, one of our most popular programs. This week, Ana Mateo will bring us part four of her four-part series on the many American English expressions using the word ice. Yes, it's the conclusion of her mystery featuring cold weather expressions. And as we do every Sunday, we will present The Making of a Nation. Today, we will tell you about the presidency of Lyndon Johnson. It began with the assassination of John F. Kennedy. So you can see, as always, we have a lot for you today. So let's get started. Here's Ana Mateo.
And now, the VOA Learning English Program, Words and Their Stories. Stories are great vehicles for learning a language. For the past 3 weeks, we have taught cold weather expressions with the story, Mystery at the Ice Castle Inn. This week, we end our mystery. Our story began with a group of four travelers snowed in at the Ice Castle Inn. The players in our mystery are Vincent, the handsome athlete, Madeline, the young teacher, Sylvia, the beautiful aging actress, and Major Jack, the ex-military man. We also met the housekeeper. She sends the group on a treasure hunt throughout the castle. When the four return to the fire, they are confused by the so-called treasures they found. They also find out that the housekeeper is really Crystal Castle, the owner of the inn. Crystal then introduces the group to her adopted daughter, Hope, and accuses them all of driving her insane. This is where we continue our mystery. It is now the middle of the night. Crystal lets everything out in the open. She explains how each person in that room contributed to her beloved girl's insanity. I'll start with you, Vincent. You and Hope were engaged. But on the wedding day, you broke your promise to marry her, leaving her stranded at the church. Vincent says nervously, I got cold feet. I was nervous and changed my mind at the last minute. He picks up the white wedding veil from the floor and holds it tightly. If you must know, it was the worst mistake of my life. I've never been the same. I've never been happy. I was happy with hope, but I was too young to marry. He sinks into the chair. He looks deep into the fire, his mind trapped in the mistake of years past. You may think you know me, but you don't know anything about me, he says, his voice filled with regret. I know a lot about you, Vincent, Crystal says. She knows, for example, that Vincent's wealth and status come entirely from his wife's family. She also knows that he was married before and never got divorced. Which means, she continues, that you are not legally married to your rich wife. What will happen if I tell her and her family? I would lose it all, he says. My wealth, home, social position. But I don't care. Tell them, I don't care about anything. Life without hope has been a cold and lonely place. I bet you didn't know that. Outside, the storm is easing. The wind blows lighter, and the snow has stopped. And hope has changed ever so slightly. She puts on a pair of slippers and moves toward the fireplace. Standing over Vincent, she lays a hand on his head. And then she speaks. It is okay, Vincent. We were very young. They are Hope's first words in many months. The young man can't bring himself to look at Hope. He simply holds tighter to her wedding veil. Crystal moves to her daughter, hugs her tightly, and puts a coat over her shoulders. Then she redirects her frigid stare to Madeline. The teacher looks down at the framed letter in her hands. You don't need to speak, Crystal. I can explain this myself, Madeline says. She says she and Hope worked at the same school. At first, they were best friends. Hope was very talented, beautiful, and kind. Everyone liked her very much. Over time, Madeline became very jealous. I tried to freeze her out as much as possible. I gave Hope the cold shoulder. I tried my best to leave her out of things. But that didn't work. So I stole money from the school and made it look like Hope did it. She was fired immediately. Crystal answers with anger. You destroyed her career and her reputation. Crystal, you should check again, Madeline says. Several teachers investigated the theft, knowing their beloved Hope would not steal. They suspected I was to blame for the situation. But they couldn't find any evidence against me. So they couldn't fire me. But my career has been in a deep freeze ever since, Madeline continues. My students hate me, the other teachers hate me, and I hate my job. And I've never had another friend like Hope. As she says this, she throws the framed termination letter across the room. Hope says in a calm, clear voice, It will all be okay. Listen, outside, the storm has stopped. The actress, Sylvia, suddenly feels an unexpected and strong feeling for this strange, quiet young woman. Then she asks Crystal how she is connected to Hope. Crystal says with an icy tone in her voice, Why, Sylvia, Hope is your daughter. With that news, Sylvia passes out cold. When she wakes up, the others learn why the actress so often holds her gold locket close to her heart. In the locket are pictures of a baby girl and a baby boy, babies she gave up for adoption. "I was young and alone," Sylvia explains. "I was poor and snowed under so many unpaid bills that I could barely breathe. I didn't know what to do with two babies, but I have thought of them every day since." "But how did you come to adopt them?" Crystal says she was a young doctoral student assigned to the orphanage. She took care of the brother and sister. When a rich relative died, she inherited a fortune and the Ice Castle Inn. So she adopted the two babies and raised them as her own. As Crystal talks of raising two wonderful children, the actress holds the locket to her chest. It was Crystal's plan all along to expose Sylvia's history. She thought that people would stop seeing her films if they knew she had given up her own children to further her career. But she now realizes that that is not true. Crystal also realizes she was wrong and feels, quite unexpectedly, ashamed. She doesn't feel any better when Sylvia looks down at her locket and asks, "Where is my son?" "This is where the major comes into the story," Crystal says hesitantly. Major Jack says that he does not know this young woman. Crystal agrees with him. "That's right, you don't," she says. "But you did know her brother, her only brother. They were so close growing up. They were more like best friends than brother and sister. His name was Lieutenant Justice Castle." Major Jack's blood turns to ice. Yes, he knows the name Justice Castle very well. "Justice was a soldier under my command, one of the finest soldiers I have ever met. We were on a peacekeeping mission and weren't supposed to see any fighting. But I got my information wrong. I sent his squad into a dangerous area. The major has a difficult time continuing." His voice breaks as he speaks, and his eyes fill with tears. "Justice was killed in action because of my mistake, but I lied on official reports. I blamed him for misreading a map. This has haunted me ever since. Before coming on this trip, I told my superiors the truth about what happened that day. When I return, I will probably be court-martialed, and I deserve it." Crystal turns off a recording device. She had planned to say, "And now I have recorded your statement, Major." She had planned to say, "Now I have the proof I need to ruin you too." But her plans are not necessary now. He is already a ruined man. Vincent is the next to speak. "Do you mean to tell us that for the past several years, you have been collecting information on us? Planning this whole trip just to get even with us?" Crystal stares at the empty faces of the group and says, "Revenge is a dish best served cold." "What does that mean, Mother?" asks Hope, as she moves to Crystal's side. "It means," she explains, "that I have waited a long time to get my revenge, and that just makes my revenge feel even better." "But revenge won't bring back justice, will it?" "No, it won't, my dear." Crystal collapses into a chair, tired from the years of planning and hating. She has waited so long to get her revenge for her daughter, but now it is cold comfort. The revenge has offered her none of the reward she thought it would. "Oh, look, the sun is coming up," Hope says happily. "And what's that on the horizon?" The group are shocked to hear the sounds of a helicopter approaching. "Look, Mother," says Hope. "A helicopter is landing on the big lawn. How beautiful the day is going to be." She looks reborn, renewed. "Yes, I think it will be," says Crystal Castle. "Let's get our bags and leave this cold place. How would you like to spend the rest of the winter on a tropical island?" "That sounds lovely," Hope says as the color returns to her cheeks. "But what about the others? I hope they will be all right. I hope." A helicopter is not the only sound they hear. A snowplow is slowly working its way up the long drive to the Ice Castle Inn. It won't be long before Vincent, Madeline, Sylvia, and Major Jack will be able to leave the inn and return to their normal lives. Or will they? Will their lives ever be normal again? Will any of them ever be the same again? And so ends Mystery at the Ice Castle Inn. I'm Anna Mateo.
Thanks, Anna. We have really enjoyed that four-part mystery. Now, we present The Making of a Nation. Today, we begin the story of President Lyndon Johnson.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.
Lyndon Baines Johnson became America's 36th president suddenly.
Vice President Lyndon Johnson has left the hospital in Dallas. Presumably, he will be taking the oath of office shortly and become the 36th President of the United States.
On November 22nd, 1963, President John F. Kennedy was murdered. Kennedy and Johnson, his vice president, were in Dallas, Texas. Kennedy was shot as his open car drove through the city. Within a few hours, Johnson was sworn into office. The swearing-in took place on the presidential plane, Air Force One, at Dallas's Love Field. The plane returned to Andrews Air Force Base near Washington, carrying the new president and the body of the former president. At Andrews, President Johnson read a brief statement. He ended with these words, "I will do my best. That is all I can do. I ask for your help and God's." Before he was vice president, LBJ had served for many years in the Senate and the House of Representatives. He grew up in small towns in Texas. He finished high school at age 15. He traveled and worked for a few years before he entered Southwest Texas State Teachers College. There, he was a student leader and a political activist. In 1931, a newly elected congressman asked Johnson to work for him as his secretary in Washington. 4 years later, President Franklin Roosevelt appointed Johnson as Texas Director of Roosevelt's National Youth Administration. 2 years after that, in 1937, Johnson won a special election for a seat in the House of Representatives. He served in the House for 12 years. When the United States entered World War II, Johnson was the first member of Congress at that time to volunteer for active duty. After the war, he ran for the Senate, where he also served for 12 years. Johnson loved politics and became an expert in the operations of government. He would need all of that knowledge as president of a nation facing problems near and far. When Johnson took office, communist forces were fighting South Vietnamese troops supported by the United States. Also, there were continuing worries about nuclear war with the Soviet Union. At home, there was racial conflict. Many Americans were out of work, and there was the threat of a railroad strike. Johnson began his presidency by working hard for legislation that President Kennedy had proposed. Johnson had voted against civil rights legislation when he served in the Senate, but now he urged Congress to support the idea, and Congress agreed. The 1964 Civil Rights Act barred discrimination against minorities in jobs and in restaurants and other businesses.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment. We believe that all men have certain unalienable rights, yet many Americans do not enjoy those rights. We believe that all men are entitled to the blessings of liberty, yet millions are being deprived of those blessings, not because of their own failures, but because of the color of their skin.
The president said that such a situation could not continue in America. To treat people unfairly because of their race, he said, violated the Constitution and the idea of democracy. Lyndon Johnson succeeded in getting Congress to pass more civil rights legislation in 1965 and 68.
Many of the issues of civil rights are very complex and most difficult. But about this, there can and should be no argument. Every American citizen must have an equal right to vote. There is no reason which can excuse the denial of that right. There is no duty which weighs more heavily on us than the duty we have to ensure that right.
Many southern states used so-called literacy tests as a way to deny blacks the right to vote. The Civil Rights Act of 1965 said states could not prevent citizens from voting just because they could not read very well. The 1968 law barred discrimination against blacks in housing. Johnson was from the South. That and his ability to persuade people helped him get Southern conservatives in Congress to support the civil rights legislation. He also had other ideas for a better America. He called his plan the Great Society. He talked about it in a speech at the University of Michigan.
The Great Society rests on abundance and liberty for all. It demands an end to poverty and racial injustice, to which we're totally committed in our time. But that is just the beginning. The Great Society is a place where every child can find knowledge to enrich his mind and to enlarge his talents.
Johnson launched the War on Poverty, a series of bills designed to help the poor. But his efforts to pay for social programs and a war overseas led to inflation. Vietnam was not the only place where Johnson used military force. In 1965, he sent more than 20,000 troops to intervene in the Dominican Republic. He worried that a revolution could lead to a communist takeover of that Caribbean nation. Lyndon Johnson served the last 14 months of President Kennedy's term. Then, in 1964, he ran for a full term. The Democratic Party strongly supported him and accepted his choice of Hubert Humphrey for vice president. Humphrey was a liberal senator from the state of Minnesota. Unlike the Democrats, the Republicans had a difficult time choosing their presidential candidate. Delegates at the party's nominating convention finally chose Barry Goldwater. Goldwater was a strongly conservative senator from Arizona.
Certainly, simple honesty is not too much to demand of men in government. And let our republicanism so focused and so dedicated not be made fuzzy and futile by unthinking and stupid labels. I would remind you that extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. And let me remind you also that moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue.
The Republican candidate for vice president was William Miller, a congressman from New York State. Americans voted in November of 1964. Lyndon Johnson won more than 60% of the popular vote. Still, he had hoped for an even bigger victory. He wanted proof that Americans were voting for him and not the shadow of John Kennedy. In his inaugural speech, Johnson said his great society would never be finished. It would keep growing and improving.
I do not believe that the great society is the ordered, changeless, and sterile battalion of the ants. It is the excitement of becoming, always becoming, trying, probing, falling, resting, and trying again, but always trying and always gaining.
In 1965, he won congressional approval of Medicare, a health insurance program for Americans age 65 and older. President Harry Truman had called for such a plan 20 years earlier. Johnson presented Truman and his wife Bess with Medicare cards numbers 1 and 2. Under Johnson, Congress also approved Medicaid, a health care program for the poor and disabled. In 1967, President Johnson appointed the nation's first black justice to the Supreme Court, Thurgood Marshall.
Hell no, we won't go! Hell no, we won't go! Hell no, we won't go! Hell no, we won't go!
Around the country, President Johnson faced growing opposition to the war in Vietnam. More and more American troops were dying. Lyndon Johnson may have wanted to be remembered as a great president, but the war came to define his presidency. That will be our story tomorrow on this program. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz, reporting from Washington. I hope you'll join us tomorrow for another Learning English program from The Voice of America.